A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a green planet in space. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In a black-and-white film, titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Spencer Tracy as Dr. Henry Jekyll, Ingrid Bergman as Ivy Peterson, and Lana Turner as Beatrice Emery in Victor Fleming's production of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Copyright 1941, Lowe's Incorporated. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Samantha Manahan. Read by Margot Stage. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. More titles with Donald Crisp, Ian Hunter, Barton McLean, and C. Aubrey Smith. Screenplay by John Lee Mayen, based on the novel by Robert Louis Stevenson. Director of Photography, Joseph Rottenberg, ASC. Musical score, Franz Waxman. Art Director, Cedric Gibbons. Special effects, Warren Newcomb. Directed by Victor Fleming. Now, inside an elegant steepled church, a minister stands in a raised pulpit.
With purity in our hearts, with right thinking in our minds, we arm ourselves with intolerance of all evil. So it is on this glorious Sabbath morning, in this momentous year of 1887, we naturally turn our thoughts towards that way of life as exemplified by Victoria, our beloved Queen. For this week begins Her Majesty's Golden Jubilee. From her heart has come an ever-increasing flow of virtue and moral blessing. She came upon a world sadly mired in the ways of the flesh.
As a beady-eyed parishioner stands, his wife yanks him to his seat.
And great victories over the forces of evil. And though we know not the time...
He wipes his sweat-beaded brow.
We know that in God's own time, evil shall be wiped out by good.
Evil wiped out, eh?
And may we not live for the day.
Take all the fun out of life, eh, Bishop?
The beady-eyed man wags his hat at the bishop. In a front pew, the dapper, clean-cut Dr. Jekyll turns back to see several men escort Sam out the back.
But the world moves forward today.
Curious choir boys stand. In the foyer, Dr. Jekyll interrupts Sam's escort.
Yes, yes.
Hello. Hello, Governor. Say, you let me go back in there and I'll tell him what a grown man really thinks about it.
Has he been like this before?
It's been getting worse since the explosion.
Shock, boy.
You're a full-blooded young fella. You tell him.
I thought if we got into church...
We know, don't we?
The constable arrives.
What's going on here? Yeah, much for you. Drunk and disorderly.
Now, wait a minute, Constable. If you just take him to cab to the hospital, would you give that to Dr. Heath, please?
Dr. Jekyll hands him his card.
Oh, Dr. Jekyll. Bats, is he? Right, sir. Camden Hospital it is, Dr. Jekyll. All right, my lovely upsy,
Dr. Jekyll,
how about a little fresh air?
Will you go on, Dr. Jekyll, and try to put old Beelzebub in his bottomless pit? He'll show you. Go back and be good, Dr. Jekyll.
Clenching his lips, Dr. Jekyll strides back to his pew and stands next to a pretty blonde woman. She smiles sweetly as he shares her hymnal. Jekyll escorts the blonde woman outside, accompanied by her gentlemanly father.
I must go to the hospital, sir.
Hospital on a Sunday? Oh, you mean that outrageous individual.
Harry says the Providence dropped the man right into his lap.
Well, but isn't this most unusual, my boy?
I'm sorry, but it is, sir, most unusual.
Oh, don't you dare be late for the Marley dinner tonight, darling.
And let you have a free rein with all those men, I should say now.
She turns her cheek for a kiss, but Harry steals one from her lips. Her father shoots him a scornful glance, then sits in a carriage next to his daughter.
You know, that's a pretty silly little hat you've got on.
I knew you'd like it.
There's nothing about you I like.
He kisses, then tries to bite her hand.
All right, Jenkins.
As the carriage pulls away, she waves back at Jekyll. Her father taps her arm.
My dear, please.
Oh, sorry, Father.
My dear Beatrice, I'm a very broad-minded man, as you know, but I do wish Harry wouldn't make such demonstrations of affection in public, even if you are going to marry him.
Now, Father, darling, don't be pompous.
Good heavens, nibbling your knuckles.
Now, at the hospital.
Tell her what a grown man really thinks about it.
I can't allow it. It's a matter of ethics, Jekyll.
Please, Dr. Jekyll, may I go in?
No, not now, Mrs. Higgins. Bear up now. That's how you can help.
Leaving Mrs. Higgins outside Sam's door, Jekyll and a doctor with sideburns stride down the corridor.
Good heavens, man, it's the greatest opportunity I've ever had. The more I see of the case, the more I realize it.
Well, my dear Jekyll, you know how we all admire your work, and possibly this case does come within the scope of your research. That's why I'd like to bow to your opinion. But as head of the staff of this hospital, I cannot...
As he glimpses Mrs. Higgins listening in, he ushers Jekyll into a storage room.
Listen, Jacob. Tell me straight up. What do you think you could do for this man?
I might have a chance of curing him.
A chance?
Yes, I've been experimenting with animals.
Yeah, but what might work with animals might not with a human being. Your chemicals may be deadly.
No, not one animal has died.
But it might. No, it's too dangerous, Jacob. Too outside of known medicine.
But I'm no witch doctor.
But who's called you a witch doctor? You told me yourself that it still had to be proved. I can't allow you to experiment with... Well, after all, the man's a human being.
You mean he was a human being? And he might be again if you'd keep your hidebound ethics out of this. Sometimes we have to gamble. Or haven't you the courage to face what might be the most daring...
Listen, Jekyll, I wouldn't talk these experiments around very openly if I were you. You're dealing with things it would be better not to mention for your own sake. There might be trouble.
Trouble? Trouble.
As Jekyll storms off, a tall, jaunty man meets him on the staircase.
Hurry, old boy. There are rumors of... What's the matter?
Don't worry, John. The bull is leaving the china shop.
No, Harry, it can't be as bad as that.
John, my good friend, I realize your Dr. Heath is right. After all, we doctors can't experiment on human beings. Something might go wrong, and then the human beings would no longer believe in our medicine. Isn't that right?
Now, look here.
But when I get the proof, ethics or no ethics...
I want to be on hand. China or no china?
Later, Jekyll enters his richly furnished townhouse. A tuxedo-clad butler with neatly combed hair takes a medicine case from him.
Good afternoon, sir. Just in time for tea, sir. I'll be bound you had no lunch, sir. Now, what about some nice hot crumpets, sir, huh? Of course, we mustn't spoil our appetite for dinner tonight. Miss Beatrice would be after me properly if we did that, sir. And besides... Mrs. Marley's butler tells me that their new cook is really first class, sir.
Jekyll grabs his case.
But, sir, what about your tea, sir?
The butler follows Jekyll out the back door onto a second-story terrace.
Shall I serve it down there, sir? Now, look here, sir. You must have something, you know.
The butler shakes his head as Jekyll crosses a stepped bridge and enters a rugged stone building. Inside, Jekyll descends a solid wooden staircase into his dimly lit laboratory. He sets his case on a table near a freestanding wall of small animal cages. He checks on the rats and rabbits. His wide, dark eyes lock on a stiff rat, belly up in its cage. Below it, he sees a dead rabbit. A pipe dangles from his mouth as he quickly takes off his black frock coat and slips on a shorter woolen blazer. Clenching his lips, he takes a half-empty glass vial from his case, then tosses it into the fireplace. He strides to his lab table, where an elaborate network of bottles, flasks, and beakers are connected by glass tubes. He strikes a match, turns on the gas, then lights a burner. With his brow pinched in concentration, he opens a journal and reads. Evening. At the Marleys' dinner party, 13 guests, including Beatrice and her father, Jekyll's lanky friend Dr. John Lanyon, and the bishop, sit around an elegant table. Beatrice's father discreetly glances at his pocket watch, then gazes somberly at his daughter. Her heavy, glistening eyes move from the empty chair beside her to the door. Jekyll crisply strides in and shakes the hand of a curly-haired woman at the head of the table.
Mrs. Marley, my deepest apologies.
You doctors, I know we...
A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a green planet in space. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In a black-and-white film, titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Spencer Tracy as Dr. Henry Jekyll, Ingrid Bergman as Ivy Peterson, and Lana Turner as Beatrice Emery in Victor Fleming's production of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Copyright 1941, Lowe's Incorporated. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Samantha Manahan. Read by Margot Stage. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. More titles with Donald Crisp, Ian Hunter, Barton McLean, and C. Aubrey Smith. Screenplay by John Lee Mayen, based on the novel by Robert Louis Stevenson. Director of Photography, Joseph Rottenberg, ASC. Musical score, Franz Waxman. Art Director, Cedric Gibbons. Special effects, Warren Newcomb. Directed by Victor Fleming. Now, inside an elegant steepled church, a minister stands in a raised pulpit.
With purity in our hearts, with right thinking in our minds, we arm ourselves with intolerance of all evil. So it is on this glorious Sabbath morning, in this momentous year of 1887, we naturally turn our thoughts towards that way of life as exemplified by Victoria, our beloved Queen. For this week begins Her Majesty's Golden Jubilee. From her heart has come an ever-increasing flow of virtue and moral blessing. She came upon a world sadly mired in the ways of the flesh.
As a beady-eyed parishioner stands, his wife yanks him to his seat.
And great victories over the forces of evil. And though we know not the time...
He wipes his sweat-beaded brow.
We know that in God's own time, evil shall be wiped out by good.
Evil wiped out, eh?
And may we not live for the day.
Take all the fun out of life, eh, Bishop?
The beady-eyed man wags his hat at the bishop. In a front pew, the dapper, clean-cut Dr. Jekyll turns back to see several men escort Sam out the back.
But the world moves forward today.
Curious choir boys stand. In the foyer, Dr. Jekyll interrupts Sam's escort.
Yes, yes. Hello. Hello, Governor. Say, you let me go back in there and I'll tell him what a grown man really thinks about it.
Has he been like this before?
It's been getting worse since the explosion.
Shock, boy.
You're a full-blooded young fella. You tell him.
I thought if we got into church...
We know, don't we?
The constable arrives.
What's going on here? Yeah, much for you. Drunk and disorderly.
Now, wait a minute, Constable. If you just take him to Camden Hospital, would you give that to Dr. Heath, please?
Dr. Jekyll hands him his card.
Oh, Dr. Jekyll. Bats, is he? Right, sir. Camden Hospital it is, Dr. Jekyll. All right, my lovely upsy-daisy.
Dr. Jekyll,
how about a little fresh air?
Will you go on, Dr. Jekyll, and trying to put old Beelzebub in his bottomless pit? He'll show you. Go back and be good, Dr. Jekyll.
Clenching his lips, Dr. Jekyll strides back to his pew and stands next to a pretty blonde woman. She smiles sweetly as he shares her hymnal. Jekyll escorts the blonde woman outside, accompanied by her gentlemanly father.
I must go to the hospital, sir.
Hospital on a Sunday? Oh, you mean that outrageous individual.
Harry says the Providence dropped the man right into his lap.
12, but isn't this most unusual, my boy?
I'm sorry, but it is, sir, most unusual.
Oh, don't you dare be late for the Marley dinner tonight, darling.
And let you have a free rein with all those men, I should say now.
She turns her cheek for a kiss, but Harry steals one from her lips. Her father shoots him a scornful glance, then sits in a carriage next to his daughter.
You know, that's a pretty silly little hat you've got on.
I knew you'd like it.
There's nothing about you I like.
He kisses, then tries to bite her hand.
All right, Jenkins.
As the carriage pulls away, she waves back at Jekyll. Her father taps her arm.
My dear, please.
Oh, sorry, Father.
My dear Beatrice, I'm a very broad-minded man, as you know, but I do wish Harry wouldn't make such demonstrations of affection in public, even if you are going to marry him.
Now, Father, darling, don't be pompous.
Good heavens, nibbling your knuckles.
Now, at the hospital.
Tell her what a grown man really thinks about it.
I can't allow it. It's a matter of ethics, Jekyll.
Please, Dr. Jekyll, may I go in?
No, not now, please. Mrs. Higgins. Bear up now. That's how you can help.
Leaving Mrs. Higgins outside Sam's door, Jekyll and a doctor with sideburns stride down the corridor.
Good heavens, man, it's the greatest opportunity I've ever had. The more I see of the case, the more I realize it.
Dear, my dear Jekyll, you know how we all admire your work, and possibly this case does come within the scope of your research. That's why I'd like to bow to your opinion. But as head of the staff of this hospital, I cannot...
As he glimpses Mrs. Higgins listening in, he ushers Jekyll into a storage room.
Listen, Jekyll. Tell me straight up. What do you think you could do for this man?
I might have a chance of curing him.
A chance?
Yes, I've been experimenting with animals.
Yeah, but what might work with animals might not with a human being. Your chemicals may be deadly.
No, not one animal has died.
But it might. No, it's too dangerous, Jekyll. Too outside of known medicine.
But I'm no witch doctor.
But who's called you a witch doctor? You told me yourself that it still had to be proved. I can't allow you to experiment with... Well, after all, the man's a human being.
You mean he was a human being? And he might be again if you'd keep your hidebound ethics out of this. Sometimes we have to gamble. Or haven't you the courage to face what might be the most daring...
Listen, Jekyll, I wouldn't talk these experiments around very openly if I were you. You're dealing with things it would be better not to mention for your own sake. There might be trouble.
Trouble? Trouble.
As Jekyll storms off, a tall, jaunty man meets him on the staircase.
Hurry, old boy. There are rumors of... What's the matter?
Don't worry, John. The bull is leaving the china shop.
Now, Harry, it can't be as bad as that.
John, my good friend, I realize your Dr. Heath is right. After all, we doctors can't experiment on human beings. Something might go wrong, and then the human beings would no longer believe in our medicine. Isn't that right?
Now, look
here. But when I get the proof, ethics or no ethics...
I want to be on hand. China or no China.
Later, Jekyll enters his richly furnished townhouse. A tuxedo-clad butler with neatly combed hair takes a medicine case from him.
Good afternoon, sir. Just in time for tea, sir. I'll be bound you had no lunch, sir. Now, what about some nice hot crumpets, sir, huh? Of course, we mustn't spoil our appetite for dinner tonight. Miss Beatrice would be after me properly if we did that, sir. And besides... Mrs. Marley's butler tells me that their new cook is really first class, sir.
Jekyll grabs his case.
But, sir, what about your tea, sir?
The butler follows Jekyll out the back door onto a second-story terrace.
Shall I serve it down there, sir? Now, look here, sir. You must have something, you know.
The butler shakes his head as Jekyll crosses a stepped bridge and enters a rugged stone building. Inside, Jekyll descends a solid wooden staircase into his dimly lit laboratory. He sets his case on a table near a freestanding wall of small animal cages. He checks on the rats and rabbits. His wide, dark eyes lock on a stiff rat, belly up in its cage. Below it, he sees a dead rabbit. A pipe dangles from his mouth as he quickly takes off his black frock coat and slips on a shorter woolen blazer. Clenching his lips, he takes a half-empty glass vial from his case, then tosses it into the fireplace. He strides to his lab table, where an elaborate network of bottles, flasks, and beakers are connected by glass tubes. He strikes a match, turns on the gas, then lights a burner. With his brow pinched in concentration, he opens a journal and reads. Evening. At the Marleys' dinner party, 13 guests, including Beatrice and her father, Jekyll's lanky friend Dr. John Lanyon, and the bishop, sit around an elegant table. Beatrice's father discreetly glances at his pocket watch, then gazes somberly at his daughter. Her heavy, glistening eyes move from the empty chair beside her to the door. Jekyll crisply strides in and shakes the hand of a curly-haired woman at the head of the table.
Mrs. Marley, my deepest apologies.
You doctors, I know we can never rely on you.
You know, I don't mind being scolded by the smartest hostess in London.
Dr. Jekyll, do sit over there.
Thank you.
Jekyll takes a seat between Beatrice and a garish woman.
Special apologies to you, Lady Corporal.
Beatrice smiles at him.
Behaving yourself?
A doctor's life, huh, Harry?
More patients, the colder the soup, huh?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it wasn't a patient. I got started on something and forgot to look at the clock.
Oh, yes, Jekyll. Heath was telling me that you're still carrying on with that research work of yours.
I'm afraid Dr. Heath isn't in sympathy, Dr. Corton.
Well, that's understandable, isn't it? After all, separating the facets of the brain. Rather ambitious, I should call it.
Harry's research hopes to go deeper than the brain, sir. Into something more intangible than the mind, even.
And all that seems to be left is the soul.
All right, then, call it the soul.
The soul.
The bishop eyes Jekyll.
Come, my dear doctor. Now you're invading my territory.
Well, I suppose I am, sir, but I know that you, for one, wouldn't object if science could be of some assistance to the church.
The church is always grateful for any help, doctor.
Of course, Harry doesn't mean a word of this gentleman. I'm afraid he's pulling our leg.
I should hope so. I was wondering what poor Jekyll would do if I asked him to elaborate.
Well, I don't mind elaborating. Most of you were in church this morning. If you didn't see that poor chap, you heard him, I'm sure.
Yes, sir.
Ah, yes, sir. I thank you for your assistance there, doctor.
Hopelessly insane, obviously.
I don't think he was insane. I think there was only one side of him in existence, and that side was expressing itself.
Good heavens, which side?
His evil side.
Evil side?
The man had been spiritually distorted through shock, that explosion in the gas main last month. Before that, he was a fine, solid citizen, gentle and kind with his children, deeply in love with his wife. Since then, he had undergone a complete change. Until this afternoon, I found him completely reverted to the animal.
But look here, Harry, we can clearly understand a shock to the nervous system, but what's that got to do with the soul?
Well, I think the man had been shocked from normal good into complete evil. Now, when I say he was a good man, I don't mean that he hadn't had a bad thought now and then, or that he hadn't committed ordinary transgressions against society. But after all, that's the problem of civilized man's soul, isn't it? That the good and evil in it are constantly fighting one another?
There's a higher source from which the good can find aid in its fight, Doctor.
I realize that, sir, but...
Of course, the Colonel and I have always felt that a person can be good if they wish to be. And, well, otherwise if they don't.
Look here, Jekyll, I simply must get this straight.
Well, let me put it this way. Good and evil are so close as to be chained together in the soul. Now, suppose we could break that chain, separate those two cells. Free the good in man and let it go on to its higher destiny, and segregate the bad.
But aren't you a bit presumptuous in assuming that there's evil in all men?
Oh, but isn't that true? Wouldn't we be hypocrites if we didn't admit that? After all, we've all had thoughts that we didn't want published or shouted out loud, and we certainly have had desires that are not confined to a drawing room. Why, as Christians, we admit that man is created weak. That's a perfectly honest problem. Why don't we face it?
Suppose we believe that man's soul has not yet reached its fulfillment. Is it wise? Is it right to tamper with the problem until the Creator himself has solved it in his own mysterious way?
Sir, I...
Really, Jekyll, this is very disturbing. Such theories come dangerously close to... Well, I hesitate to think what the medical council would be forced to say.
Dr. Cortland, advanced theories are always a sore point with the medical council. Or even with a queen's physician, especially if there's a comfortable profit in those already established.
Jekyll,
if you ask my opinion, young man, this is pure balderdash.
Lady? Oh, I meant to ask. Has anyone read that poem by this new chap, Oscar Wilde? Come
on. The guests rise and disperse. With a sly grin, Jekyll pulls out Beatrice's chair for her. As she leaves, she throws a concerned look over her shoulder. He smiles back. Her father stares sternly across the table at Jekyll. Later, tense and still, Beatrice, her father, Jekyll, and Dr. John Lanyon ride in a carriage. It stops, and the driver hops down to open the door.
Oh, well, getting older, I suppose.
Well, Sir Charles, I think it's pretty late. We ought to...
No. Come in and have a nightcap, John. You think the rest of the company won't be bored with each other?
Well, thank you, sir.
Draped in a glittering black cape, Beatrice leads the gentleman inside. In the Emery's luxurious drawing room, she puts a record on a wooden-cased phonograph.
Look.
Jekyll glances over his shoulder at Sir Charles. The stern gentleman fingers his gold pocket watch as he steps over to the mantel and looks up at a gilt-framed portrait of a young, elegant woman. Curly blonde bangs frame her delicate features. Sir Charles's doleful eyes glisten.
It's the waltz that he and Mama first danced together.
Jekyll looks from Sir Charles to the portrait, then smiles gently. Wearing black tails and a white bow tie, he bows to Beatrice.
May I have this dance, Miss Beatrice?
Pleasure, Dr. Jekyll.
She dips her knee to the floor in a curtsy, gracefully picks up the ruffled train of her dress, and takes his hand. Gazing fondly into each other's eyes, they waltz. Sir Charles watches the couple twirl delicately out of the room. With sweeping spins, Jekyll leads Beatrice into a greenhouse, stops beneath a canopy of palm fronds, and draws her into a kiss.
Bee, darling.
Harry.
I love you so very much, Bee.
Again, he presses his lips onto hers.
Tonight at dinner, I understood what you said about the good and evil in people, and how it's that way in all of us. But why isn't the way you and I feel about each other? I mean, there's nothing evil in that, is there?
You think there is?
No. No, Harry.
You were in love, aren't we?
You're so very much in love.
That's all the difference.
They share another kiss when her father enters.
Oh, my dear, John is looking for a piece of music, the banks of Loch Lomond or something. Will you help me find it?
Yes, Father.
Thank you.
Beatrice leaves.
Harry. I'm not one to brood about things, but you must have noticed my concern in the carriage.
Why, no, sir, I just thought that...
Well, that amazing flight of fancy you put forth at dinner, I must confess it startled me. And although I'm broad-minded myself, it was a little shocking, too.
I'm sorry to hear you say that, sir, because I assure you it was not a flight of fancy.
You mean you actually were in earnest?
Profoundly, sir. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to spend all of my time.
Well, this is very distressing, Harry.
Why?
Well, in my opinion, the whole thing's harebrained.
Well, I'm sorry to hear you say that, sir.
You're a coming man in your profession. I'm very proud of you. But these ridiculous experiments won't get you anywhere. You must give them up. Develop your practice. Cultivate the circle in which you and Beatrice shall move. Harry, my boy, I've always wanted a son. And now you're going to be that. Now I've had my say. Let's have your nightcap. It's getting late.
They head inside.
And by the way, I've taken a box for the opening concert at Albert Hall. You will join us, of course.
Later, Jekyll and Dr. John Lennon don their top hats as they step outside.
What's up? You and the old boy cross swords?
Yes. Seems I must discontinue my research.
That's where you'll find me from tonight on. Until I get what I'm looking for.
Later, in Jekyll's laboratory, furrowing his brow in concentration, the doctor sits at his chemistry table, his notebook open. Later, an opaque liquid boils rapidly in a round-bottom distilling flask. The vapors pass through a coiled condenser, producing droplets into a beaker. With the shadow of a beard, he stares wearily at his pocket watch. In a montage, we see Jekyll nod off, then the turning pages of his formula-filled notebook and a dark, steaming potion. Now, Jekyll pets a calm white rabbit in its cage. With a pipette, he gently feeds it several drops of a dark potion. Next, he reaches a gloved hand into a rat's cage. The rodent attacks his finger. Tightly gripping the rat, he forces a dark potion down its throat. Later, as Jekyll reaches into the rabbit's cage, it snaps at him. With a savage grin, he yanks his hand away, then tries again. The rabbit lashes back. Jekyll closes the cage triumphantly. He nervously reaches into the rat's cage, gently strokes the rodent's neck, and smiles. Later, he places the black potion in his medicine case. Now at the theater. Beatrice sits beside an empty seat. Her father glances at his pocket watch and sighs. With wide doe eyes, Beatrice turns to John.
I'm worried, John. The auto blood is near.
You'll be alone.
Beatrice forces a smile. Meanwhile, Dr. Jekyll hurries into Camden Hospital with his medicine case. A white-coated doctor escorts Mrs. Higgins downstairs. She dabs her nose with a white handkerchief. Jekyll stares down at his case with a disappointed gaze. He exchanges a slight nod with the doctor, then lays a comforting hand on the widow's arm and escorts her outside. Taking slow, heavy steps, they head toward his waiting carriage.
Maybe it's all for the best, Dr. Jekyll. That wasn't my Sam in there. It was as if the evil one had crept into his heart. My poor Sam.
Burke, take Mrs. Higgins home.
Yes, sir.
I'll walk.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Jekyll.
She climbs into the carriage.
Good night, Mrs. Higgins.
Later, he enters a wrought iron front gate. A stocky night watchman locks it behind him.
Hello, Dr. Jekyll. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Waller.
Just in time, sir. Just locking up. If you wait half a moment till I fix this thing over here, I'll walk up to the east gate with you.
Jekyll frowns, preoccupied.
Wonderful nights we're having, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you believe a word about this here comet. And the world coming to an end business. If you ask me, it don't amount to a row of beans. Newspaper talk, that's what I calls it. Don't you believe it, sir. Just step down to Lloyd's and take out an insurance policy, and it won't cost you any more than it did last week when there was no talk about a comet or the world running into one. And those are the fellas that know what they're talking about, sir. You take that from me.
Mr. Weller, here's a point. If you had a balloon that could carry a man to Mars, and the pilot you had picked suddenly disappeared, would you get in the balloon yourself and cast off?
A balloon? Well, that's a good one, sir. I think you got me there. I don't know, though. If I had a balloon that'd take me there, and back, mind you, I don't know that I wouldn't have a go at it. Might get me away from my mother-in-law for a while. How's that for an answer, Dr. Jekyll?
Fair enough, Mr. Weller, fair enough.
Later, in his office, Jekyll writes at his desk. Wearing a tie and smoking jacket, he looks up in thought, then continues his letter. We can read only the words, still unknown. Jekyll hurriedly pens, therefore it is up to me to take that risk, if it should mean my death. Now, Beatrice bolts up in bed.
Yes? What?
She glances nervously around her dark room, then springs out of bed and freezes, her face tense with worry. Wearing a flowing silk nightgown, she hurries to her closet and takes out a dress. In his office, Jekyll slides the letter addressed to my darling Beatrice into an envelope, seals it, then leaves it on a table. Later, in his laboratory, he draws the curtains and bolts the door. With his notebook open and his pocket watch set, Jekyll carefully measures several dark droplets into a beaker, then adds a clear liquid. The concoction starts to bubble and steam. His glassy eyes glimmering with lamplight, Jekyll studies the steaming potion, then brings the beaker to his lips and gulps it down. Fumes swirl around his cheeks. Lightly laying two fingers on his wrist, he checks his heart rate. Black liquid dribbles down his chin. In his notebook, he records his pulse as 72, then glances at his pocket watch and lays a hand over his heart. Grinding his pencil into the page, he snaps the lead. Sweat beads across his contorted face. Vials spill off the desk as he passes out onto the floor. In a dreamy montage, we see lily pads floating in glassy water as shimmering spirals race across our view. A water lily rises to the surface and blooms. Underwater, Beatrice smiles at us, then sinks. The barmaid Jekyll rescued appears beaming as she spins through our watery view. She screams out as a mudslide swallows her. Now Jekyll stands tall, gritting his teeth as he whips a pair of galloping horses. They turn into Beatrice and the barmaid, their hair blowing wildly in the wind. Jekyll madly swings his whip. The barmaid looks back in horror. As though looking down a whirlpool, our view dissolves to Jekyll lying on the floor near an overturned chair. Shadows darken his figure. On his side, he pushes himself onto his elbow in an effort to stand. Grabbing the desk, he pulls himself onto his knees, then braces himself between the wall and desktop and struggles to his feet. Leaning against a windowed partition, he shuffles across the room with slow, uneven steps. He passes a glass bottle. His image distorts grotesquely in the curved surface. He shuffles toward the wall and stands before a mirror. A thin layer of steam clouds his reflection. Staring at his sinister reflection with beady black eyes, he studies his thickened, rugged features. He wipes the foggy glass with his fingers. His light, wavy hair is now dark and wild and hangs in strings around his sweat-beaded face. He swipes the steamy mirror clean with his hand, then touches his protruding upper lip and brushes back his stringy hair. Jaw clenched, he briskly rubs his sleeve over the glass, clearing the fog from his reflection. Standing hunch-shouldered, he twists his chin as he studies his heavy brow and sunken eyes. His mouth pumps air at a loss for words. Eyes wide with bewilderment, he glances over his shoulder at the laboratory, then steps away from the mirror and looks down at his thick, beastly fingers. Wearing his tie loose and askew, he feels his chest. He smooths back his messy, sweat-drenched hair, steps back to the mirror, and eyes himself wolfishly.
Can this be evil, then?
Dr. Jekyll?
Outside, Poole holds a candle.
Dr. Jekyll? What's happening, sir? Are you all right?
What is it? What do you want?
Is that you, Dr. Jekyll?
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Poole.
The butler's eyes widen in concern.
Dr. Jekyll! Who is that in there?
Poole yanks on the latch, then slams his shoulder against the door.
Dr. Jekyll, answer me, sir!
Poole backs timidly away from the door. Glancing desperately around, he dashes onto Jekyll's townhouse terrace. Poole freezes. A spiked wrought iron railing casts a spiny shadow on the brick wall of the townhouse. Rigid with fright, the butler inches back toward the doctor's stone laboratory. Dr. Jekyll opens the door, his genteel features returned. In the soft candlelight, sweat glistens on his drawn, weary face.
Yes, Poole. I'm sorry, sir, but I heard an odd noise and a strange voice. I thought something was happening, sir.
No, it's quite all right, Poole. There was someone here, a friend of mine. A Mr. Hyde. I let him out the back door.
I see, sir. Very good, sir. Miss Beatrice is here, sir. I showed her into the consulting room, sir. I hope I did right, sir.
Yes, that was quite right, Poole. Tell Miss Beatrice she'll be there immediately.
Very good, sir.
Poole steps away from the door, drawing the light from Jekyll's haggard face. Shrouded by the dusky shadows, Jekyll watches him go, then closes the heavy wooden door and quickly descends the laboratory steps. He steals a quick glance from the mirror, then hurries to the desk and tears up his letter to Beatrice. His preoccupied gaze shifts around the lab. He steps to the mirror. His keen, fascinated eyes follow his hand as it traces his chin and cheeks. Neatening his appearance, he runs his fingers through his wavy hair and straightens his tie. With a tall, erect posture, he steps upstairs. Later, Jekyll strides down a dark hallway toward his consulting room. wiping the sheen of sweat from his face with a handkerchief. A thin shaft of light peeks through a crack in the double doors. As he enters, Beatrice stands, wearing a hooded, fur-lined cape over her long dress.
Harry.
She steps toward him with an anxious gaze.
What are you doing here, Bea?
Harry, then you're not...
Not what?
I don't know. I had the strangest feeling. I thought...
Yes, you thought?
That you were going away. Without ever seeing me again.
Well, why would I do that, Bea? I love you. What?
Oh, I know. But I lost you for a moment, Harry. I was afraid.
But you're not afraid now.
Of course not.
Oh, you see that everything's all right, that nothing has happened, that I'm the same as I ever was?
Of course. It must have been a dream.
Yes, yes, dream.
You're not angry with me?
Angry.
They embrace.
Oh, I don't want you to leave me, ever. I love you so much. Please don't send me away.
Their lips meet in a resolute kiss. As Jekyll eyes the door, Beatrice turns around.
Yes, Father.
Dressed in a tweed three-piece suit, Sir Charles approaches, his tight lips curved in a frown.
It's a good thing I was worried about your behavior tonight. I couldn't sleep myself.
Sir Charles, I know that it's strange for you to find Beatrice here, but I want you to believe that there was...
All I can believe is that your ideas are not normal, Jekyll. Not fit, not even...
Sir Charles, I asked Beatrice to come here tonight because...
No, Harry. Father, I know my being here is difficult to understand, but I'm not ashamed.
Then, my dear, I shall be for you, because I do understand. We leave for the continent tomorrow on the afternoon boat train.
The continent?
Father, please.
Oh, come, Sir Charles. After all, you could eliminate all this difficulty if you'd set an early date for our marriage. You don't seem to understand, sir. We're very much in love. We want to be together. We don't want to wait any longer.
Please, Father.
In view of what has happened tonight, I believe the engagement should be broken off. However, I'll be lenient. We shall see you on our return. Come, my dear.
Father, I've never disobeyed you in my life. But, Harry, if you don't want me to leave, I'll refuse.
Beatrice.
I mean it, Father.
She gazes up at Jekyll with glazed eyes.
I don't want you to go, Bea. And I can't agree with your father's decision, but I do know that he's thinking only of your happiness. I can't argue against that, and I can't ask you to.
That's highly commendable, Harry.
Will you see us off the train?
Jekyll nods.
Better have two engines. I might try to hold it back.
Try. Try anyway.
Choking back tears, she kisses his cheek and leaves. Later, in his office, Jekyll draws on his pipe as he stares somberly out the window at a steady rain cascading down the latticed panes. Poole enters, dressed in a crisp tuxedo. He carries an umbrella and a tray with a crystal decanter and a wine glass.
A glass of sherry wine, sir?
No, no, thanks.
Well, would you consider a letter from Monte Carlo, sir?
Poole smiles as Jekyll eagerly snaps up the envelope.
I'll take the sherry wine, too.
Yes, sir.
He pours.
Miss Beatrice should be returning home soon now, sir, shouldn't she?
Yes, yes, Poole.
Jekyll takes his sherry.
Hobson was telling me that they were expected.
Standing by the rain-streaked window, Jekyll reads the letter. His eyes tighten on the page as he reads, "I did not think it possible to miss anyone as I miss you, dearest heart. 4 weeks, it might as well be 4 years, and now Father's decision, oh..." He sets his sherry down absently.
Bad news, sir?
Miss Beatrice and her father are going to Aix-les-Bains.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Sir Charles' health, no doubt.
Yes, yes. Yes, Sir Charles' health, no doubt.
Jekyll sinks into a leather armchair. Poole kneels down and carefully places the broken glass in a napkin.
Sure, forgive me, sir. It upsets me to see you like this. It isn't right. All work, as the saying goes, sir.
They say there's a very interesting musical show at the Vanity Fair, sir. Very comical, you know, sir. And very daring, if you follow my meaning, sir.
Yeah, I follow your meaning, Poole. But I don't think it would be wise, even though it is comical.
Quite so, sir. I'll fetch you another glass, sir.
Well, never mind.
Poole places the glass-filled napkin on his tray, then picks up his umbrella, throwing Jekyll a concerned glance before leaving. The doctor stares grimly at Beatrice's letter. His eyes grow wide and restless. Pressing his lips together, he pops out of the chair and paces the room, his hands fidgeting in his pockets. The glass bottles of his elaborate experiments glint with lamplight. Jekyll taps his pipe nervously against the palm of his hand, then searches his jacket and desk for tobacco. His eyes lock on the barmaid's satin lace-trimmed garter. He slowly picks it up. Jekyll looks up from the garter. His brooding gaze intensifies. With wide, determined eyes, he turns briskly toward his medicine cabinet, opens the door, and takes out several vials. He sets them on the chemistry table. Later, he aims his glassy gray eyes at a beaker of dark, fuming potion. Propping his face in his hands, he slips into a phantasmagoria. In a montage, we see Beatrice lying in a field of wildflowers. The barmaid replaces her, laughing. Beatrice looks horrified. The barmaid lies in a bottle as though in a coffin. Against a backdrop of billowing flames, Beatrice waves sadly from inside the bottle. A hand cranks a corkscrew, pulling the barmaid's smiling face out of the bottleneck. A fierce explosion engulfs our view. Now in the lab, gazing into the mirror, Jekyll eyes himself as Mr. Hyde. Studying his brutish reflection, he touches his heavy jutting chin. Sweat beads on his thick brow. With a brush, he slicks back his oily black hair, then flashes himself a devilish grin. Beneath a pair of thick, bushy brows, his black eyes sparkle. Smiling in admiration, he winks at himself, then trots to the closet. Outside, it pours. Hyde steps out the back door of the laboratory, locks it, then smiles up at the dark, rainy night. He doffs his top hat, gleefully letting the drops stream down his face. Carrying a thick cane, he dons his hat and eagerly heads for the street. Later, a handsome cab stops outside the Palace of Frivolities. Hyde climbs out and pays the driver. As Hyde heads inside, he bumps into a man.
What's the idea, Governor?
Hyde glares. The cowering man doffs his hat and moves on. Hyde strides into the crowded, dimly lit cabaret. A tuxedo-clad maitre d' bows, and Hyde hands him a card.
Tis sound, not thick for my first boy. Any part with much ambition, but they won't make me their toy.
The maitre d' escorts Hyde up a set of stairs to a private table and takes his order. Grinning, Hyde watches the shapely dancers who wear short ruffled skirts and tights.
You should see me dance the polka. You should see me cover the ground. You should see my coat as flying as I jump my partner round.
Hyde glances nervously around the cabaret, then stiffly bobs his head to the beat.
In the jolliest fun I know.
Leader turns around to conduct the singing men who raise their pints. Hyde hawkishly scans the crowd and spots the sparkling-eyed barmaid behind the bar. Her bangs curl softly around her smooth, rounded features as she serves drinks and sings to two men. Hyde brightens fiendishly. She ducks a playful punch.
Then comes the play. My feet begin to fall. The body keeps jumping.
across the cabaret, the maitre d' serves Hyde his drink. Frowning, the waiter picks up a coin on the table.
Oh, a tip. A tip, of course.
Hyde drops several coins onto the tray.
7 shillings, sir. Why not? You work hard, don't you? Yes, sir. Bless you, sir.
You have a family, no doubt?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes. Thank you.
Hyde trips him as he steps downstairs.
You hurt yourself, man?
Hey, what the... Oh, what a pity. Oh, you were thinking of the children, no doubt, huh? Now, have that girl, that barmaid, bring me some champagne.
Harvey ain't allowed to leave the bar, sir.
I don't think you understood what I said.
Here, here, what's all this here?
This gent here wants champagne, sir.
A champagne? All right, then, bring it, bring it.
But he wants Ivy to serve it.
Of course Ivy will serve it, sir. Go on, look lively.
At the bar.
There's a gentleman box after what wants you to serve him. And now Prouty says you're to do it.
Oh, he does, eh? Oh, tell him it ain't my business.
What he wants, a bottle of the boy.
Oh, bubbly. Why didn't you say so?
Hey, Ivy, beloved. How about some fish and chips after the show? How about a dozen oysters and a pint of stout?
What about a glass of champagne?
Carrying a tray, Ivy stops at a table.
Oh, hello, Marcia. Hello, Ivy.
Marcia proudly points to her date. Ivy nods and moves on.
Watch out, Ivy. There's a bandit, Ivy.
Several men fondle her waist as she passes.
Ain't she a beautiful woman?
She gaily steps up the stairs to Hyde's table, sets down her tray, and starts to open the champagne.
Band commence playing, my feet making
Her smile falters as she notices Hyde's ogling stare and lecherous grin. Glancing away, she pours his champagne. Hyde looks her slowly up and down. She sets his glass down, meets his piercing, wide-eyed stare, and shores a smile.
Hey, that'd be half a quid, sir.
Half a quid?
Yes, sir. Half a quid.
Here. Here's a sovereign, my dear. Keep the change.
Thank you, sir.
He blocks her path.
Oh, but you're not going. Oh, no, no. After all, you brought 2 glasses. 2 minds with but a single thought.
My, what a nice beginning. Sit down there. Sit right down.
She sits, flinching as he sniffs her curled hair.
Well, I'll just take a sip. Of course, I shouldn't stay too long, is that?
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. Oh, you can stay as long as you like. After all, we have all evening, haven't we? Of course we have. Here.
He pours her a glass.
Oh, I like your singing. Yes. You must sing again for me sometime. Where did you get such a pretty voice?
She studies his severe face, then looks nervously away.
Why, well, I don't know. I just...
Perhaps it's the pretty place it comes from, huh?
Well, very lovely where it comes from.
Well, here's how, sir. Good luck.
I make my own luck, my dear. Yes, and tonight I follow the rainbow.
Oh, you don't have talk, do you?
Perhaps we could follow it together, huh?
I follow it right home, mister.
To that rat trap?
Hey, what are you calling names?
Well, I think you deserve something better.
How do you know where I live?
Well, I can't imagine. Surely your wages here don't earn you a place in Berkeley Square.
She sips her champagne, then gets up. As she steps away, Hyde grabs her arm.
Well, I think I'll be off.
What? I don't confuse you, do I, Ivy? I believe I do confuse you a little, don't I?
Oh, I ain't confused by nobody.
Hyde squeezes her arm.
Let go, do you hear?
He loosens his grip, then slides his hand along the sleeve of her blouse. Their eyes lock in a steady, unblinking stare.
Let go.
Her lips quiver. As Ivy turns to go, he pulls her firmly back to him.
Let go of your ear!
What's she doing, Ivy?
Well, you let go, too!
She pulls away from Hyde and a stocky patron.
Wait, what's your name? What's this all about?
It's him. He insulted her.
He's lying, I tell you. Don't pay no... He tried to break her arm.
He did.
Yes. Tried to break her arm.
A second patron slugs the stocky man.
You want another one?
Hyde grins excitedly and pushes the tall man over the railing. The manager rushes over as a brawl breaks out.
Stop it, sir.
Using his cane like a pool cue, Hyde pokes the manager's head. The floor erupts with swinging punches and flying chairs. Hyde cracks a bottle over a man's head, then smirks at the mayhem and dons his top hat. Later, Hyde watches the manager put raw steak on his face.
I can't understand what happened. Never a rumpus here. No stall to me. It's that girl. Ivy, that barmaid. Pretty girls always cause trouble. I'd throw her out if I were you.
What, Ivy? I can't do that to Ivy.
A great man can always change his mind. For a reason.
Hyde gives him some cash.
Certainly, sir. Yes, sir. A troublemaker, that's what she is. Out she goes.
Yes, but now, while the evening is still young, huh?
Yes, certainly, sir. Yes.
Later, Hyde watches the door from his carriage.
What happened? I ain't done nothing. Just minding my own business, that's all.
That's my decision, my girl.
Stop pushing!
Don't hang about here.
Who's hanging about?
Go on, don't argue the point.
Oh, good riddance.
Ivy leaves.
Oh, what's happened in there?
With a sly grin, Hyde hops out of his carriage and stops her.
Is there some trouble, Ivy?
The trouble, I was sacked, that's what.
Oh, well, how fortunate I'm here. I'd like to help you.
Oh, just let me back in. That's a confession with a nose, that's all.
Quite the little tartar, aren't you? Always ready to flare up. Oh, I like that. Here. This is just to prove that I want to help you.
With a staid smile, he places some cash in her palm and folds her fingers around the bills. Ivy stares uncertainly at Hyde, then climbs into his carriage and eyes the money. Grinning, he settles into the plush leather seat beside her.
The rainbow is wide and long, Ivy.
Hyde signals the driver.
Oh, no, wait. I better get home.
No. Good luck. Ivy, my darling, you belong with the immortals. Come with me to Mount Olympus. Drink nectar with the gods. Sing the ancient songs of pleasure. And put Athena and Diana to shame.
Ivy wearily shakes her head.
Oh, you aren't half at one with the words, aren't you?
And don't be frightened of me, will you, Ivy? When a botanist finds a rare flower, he shouts his triumph, doesn't he?
Are you one of them?
You like a man who sees a girl and makes up his mind, don't you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, she does know what I'm talking about.
He stares fiercely, his sweat-beaded face inches from hers.
Oh, please, sir.
But you'll find out, won't you? Please,
he leans to kiss her.
Oh, please. Oh, please, sir.
Fade to black. In a restaurant, a mailman approaches Beatrice and her father.
The London Post, Sir Charles.
Oh, thank you.
And one for you, mademoiselle.
Beatrice eagerly tears open the envelope, takes out the letter and reads, I cannot imagine why you have not heard from Harry, but when I return to London, I shall immediately look him up. Yours in haste, John Lanyon. Beatrice lifts her glistening eyes from the page. Her father skims his mail.
What does Harry have to say this morning, my dear? I said, what does Harry say this morning?
Oh, nothing much.
I'll wager my gout hurts him more than it does me. Huh? Does he send any news I'd be allowed to hear?
Oh, he just says that he walked through the East End recently.
Beatrice reads from the newspaper.
I have never seen such deplorable housing conditions. Surely the city father should find funds to it. Well, then he just goes on to say about the housing conditions. They must be pretty dreadful.
She's quite right. They're disgraceful. I was only just saying at the club before I left. Now there's a problem Harry could get his teeth into. He's just the man to... Here, my dear. What's wrong?
Nothing. I suppose I'm just not very interested in housing conditions at the moment.
You mean because a man doesn't cover the pages with sentiment? Nonsense. A woman must learn to read between the lines, my dear. Yes, I like the tone of that letter. And what's more, my dear, I think my gout is getting very, very much better.
Beatrice beams. now in an elegant suite. Ivy pours hot water into a china teapot. Tall, draped windows tower behind her. Wearing a flowing dressing gown with three-quarter sleeves and ruffled cuffs, she mopingly carries the teapot to a matching tea set and tosses a sugar cube in a cup. Stares frightfully at the door. Her friend from the cabaret opens it.
Oh, hello, Marcia.
Are you here alone?
Yes, I just made some tea. Come and have a cup.
Not me, neither, wife. We ain't got time. You're going to get dressed and we're going out.
Oh, well, but...
Freddie's got a young brother just down from Oxford and they want another girl to make it a quartet. Oh. He's a bit of all right, too. And we're going to the Empire.
The Empire?
Yes. No. Oh, it's ever so gay there, Ivy, and the show is grand. It's just where all the tops go.
Ivy's excited smile fades.
No, I don't think so much.
Why not?
I just don't feel like it, that's all.
You ain't afraid to go, are you?
Afraid? Why should I be afraid?
Oh, I don't know. I just thought.
Well, I ain't afraid of nobody.
But you ain't been out for ever so long, have you?
No, but...
He ain't your lord and master, is he?
I should say he ain't.
Or is it because you ain't got a nice enough dress?
Ivy's humbled gaze hardens.
Of course I have.
Well, what are you standing there for, then? Go and put it on.
Ivy's eyes shift thoughtfully.
All right.
Marcia watches Ivy hurry off, then gapes.
What's that across your back?
Ivy quickly pulls up her dressing gown.
What? There's nothing.
Marcia steps closer to her friend.
Did he do that to you? Let me see.
No. No. It ain't nothing. I just...
So that's your fine friend, is it? The dirty, filthy brute. If ever a man dared lay an hand to me like that, I...
Hyde enters and lewdly looks over Ivy's young blonde friend.
Well, aren't you going to introduce me to our charming visitor?
Ivy's chest rises with a choked breath.
It's Marcia. This is my friend, Mr. Hyde. You heard me speak about him, haven't you?
Yes, Marcia. I've heard a great deal about you. I've never been interested. Until now.
I've got to be toddling along now.
Marcia grabs her silk cape and heads for the door. Hyde stands in front of it.
Toodaloo, honey.
Oh, no, no. Don't go now, Marcia. After all, this could be very interesting, the three of us in friendly discussion.
I can't keep my friend waiting. I'll be dropping by, Ivy.
Yes. Drop by sometime when I'm here, Marcia. Your ideas differ from mine. It would be a charming experience to change them. Ivy found it that way, didn't we, dear?
He caresses Marcia's caped shoulders.
Nice material.
Goodbye.
Hyde watches her hurry out, then turns and shoots Ivy a flinty look. As he steps past her, she shrinks away from him. With a snide grin, he unties the tasseled string of his black cape and slips it off his shoulders.
Very nice material.
Crow's feet wrinkle around the corners of his dark, snickering eyes. He steps to a side table, picks up a crystal decanter, and pours himself a drink.
Marcia's a very pretty girl, isn't she?
Yes, sir.
That's what frightens you, isn't it?
He stares arrogantly.
No, sir.
You're afraid I'll become interested in Marcia.
Why, if you want to,
What? What?
He grips her arms.
You're not very clear.
Well, sir,
Oh, you poor child. I'm such a tease, aren't I? Such a tease.
Yes, sir.
what a lucky man I am to be loved this way.
He picks up a cluster of grapes, chooses one, and sucks out the juice.
But supposing I did have to leave you for a while?
Leave, sir? When?
I'm not saying when. I said suppose.
Well,
supposing I had to take a trip from time to time.
You mean soon?
Well, now, I don't know. Oh, you mustn't look so worried. It won't be for a long, long time.
Ivy's face sags.
Oh, I see.
So we won't think about it now, will we?
No, sir.
When I do go, it will break your heart, won't it?
Yes, sir.
She picks up the tea tray and moves it to a table across the room. With her back to him, she buries her face in her hands. Hyde gets up and steps toward her.
Well, what would my little cherub like to do this evening?
Oh, sir, could we go out?
Out? You mean gad about a bit? See the sights?
Yes, sir. Oh, you'd like it, wouldn't you, sir?
Well, now, I don't know. I don't know. That might be very charming. Where would we go?
Oh, they say that the Empire in such places
are
ever...
Who does?
Oh, Marcia, sir. She says it's ever so gay.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, we can go, can't we? They say that a bill is ever so good.
She offers him sugar for his tea, and he pushes it away.
I haven't been out for so long.
No. No, that's right. You haven't, have you? You do look a little pale.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Well, not that I'm complaining, you understand,
oh,
but...
No, I understand. You're just nervous and jumpy, that's all.
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes. You have that cooped-up feeling.
Yes, you do understand, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Well, then we'll...
Well, now, where would we go? We might go to Albert Hall. Yes. And hear a symphony.
Albert Hall, sir. Well, I sort of hope that...
She eyes him keenly.
What makes you say...
So you'd like to go out, huh?
A tense smile flickers across her lips.
Yes, sir. I'll go and put my things on.
Smiling, she steps away.
Don't hurry. Because we're not going.
He spits out a seed, then sits down at a piano.
The bill is ever so good right here.
Ivy sinks onto a step. Hyde spits another seed.
Now let's see. What shall we do? We could play cards.
Ivy's eyes glisten.
But you're probably tired of cards, aren't you? You might read to me. Milton's Paradise Lost would be nice. But we haven't the book, have we? And I don't suppose you know it from memory, do you? I know. I know what we liked.
Her eyes grow wide with dismay.
You must sing for me.
Trembling, she backs away from him.
No. Oh, no, not that.
Why not?
Not that.
Not in good voice?
Oh, it isn't that, sir.
Oh, but it's such a pretty song.
Oh, please, not tonight.
Oh, yes, sing it gaily.
I can't, truly, I can't.
Sing it with deep compassion. And
please, sir, don't ask
me. Or loving kindness, even.
Oh.
Sing it moodily. Sing it with
deep compassion. I can't,
you hear me? Sing it. Sing it.
He clutches her face.
You should see me dance the polka. You should see me cover the ground. You should see my bustles flying. When I whirl my pot.
Smile when you sing. Be happy. Be gay.
When the band commences playing.
That's it.
My feet begin to cough.
That's it. That's it. That's it.
For the rollicking, jumping polka.
That's it.
It's the funniest thing I know. Oh, no.
Bravo. A prima donna is born. Let's shower her with orchids.
He whips his grapes at her face.
The world is yours, my darling. The moment is mine.
He pulls her into a kiss. Morning. Hyde passes two stablemen.
And I says to the wife, I says, look here, my girl. If you think the world is...
They warily watch Hyde stride down a short stairwell to the back door of Dr. Jekyll's lab. Hyde shoots them a sharp look, then takes a skeleton key out of his pocket, unlocks the arched wooden door, and heads inside. Inside Jekyll's bedroom, Poole glumly eyes the doctor's untouched, neatly made bed, then takes an envelope from the night table. Later, Dr. Jekyll paces the lab. Poole enters with a tea tray.
Good morning, sir. How about a nice hot cup of tea, sir?
No, no.
Would you consider a telegram from foreign parts, sir?
Jekyll opens the envelope.
And a nice cup of tea as well, sir, huh? I know it's good news. Hobson told me last night that they were expected home today, sir. This is a great day for us, sir, if you'll forgive me saying so. Soon be back to our regular meals, regular hours, regular ways, sir. Your breakfast will be ready in a few minutes, sir.
Poole. I want you to put on your hat and coat and take an envelope to the district messenger office to be delivered by hand.
Very good, sir.
With his clean, wavy hair neatly brushed back, Jekyll cautiously watches Poole leave, then sets the telegram on the desk and strides briskly to the back door, his face rigid and tense. The doctor pushes the door tightly closed. From the inside, he turns the skeleton key and pulls on the handle to make sure it's locked. Across the lab, he puts the key in a clay dish, then the dish in a cast iron stove, and turns the air valve. Licking flames shoot out of the top vent and open door. Jekyll stares into the fire, then closes his eyes tight as the key to the back door starts to melt. Now in a hotel hallway, Marcia and her date from the cabaret stand outside a door.
Ivy! Ivy, dear, it's me!
Marcia glances worriedly at her friend, then steps away from the door. Ivy opens it, wearing a satiny dressing gown.
Oh, Marcia. Hello.
Hello, Ivy.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Hello, Fred.
They all head inside.
Hello. You'll get yourself a drink, Fred. I'll make some tea.
We don't want anything.
Yes, but...
Flustered, Ivy lights a burner below the tea kettle. Marcia steps behind her and comfortingly holds Ivy's arms.
Don't bother about us, Ivy, dear.
With tear-filled eyes, Ivy throws her arms around Marcia in a desperate embrace.
Oh, Marcia!
Oh, shh.
They shoot anxious stares at the door. Fred opens it to a messenger.
For Miss Ivy Peterson.
Fred takes an envelope and tips him.
Thanks, Governor.
Fred closes the door, gazes curiously at the envelope, and hands it to Ivy, who dabs her nose with a handkerchief, then opens the envelope. Stiffening with astonishment, she pulls out a wad of cash.
Look.
She slowly unfolds the money and counts the bills. A teardrop glistens on her cheek.
£50.
There ain't no letter with it. You don't suppose it's from him, do you?
Yes, the rotter must have sent it for what he's done.
No, not him. He's too mean, he is.
Ivy's glistening eyes shift uncertainly.
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him.
Clenching her lips, she sinks heavily onto the sofa.
Ha, yes. So that's it. Oops, I'll use it to try and run away. Oh, I can see him singing it up, I can.
Then he'll follow me. Just when I think that I've got free, he'll... I can't stand it anymore. I can't stand it.
Marcia hugs her.
Oh, if I could only do it, I'd go down to the river. Ivy.
It's her nerves, that's what. She ought to see a doctor.
Now Beatrice and Dr. Jekyll in a museum.
Oh, now there's a copy of The Winged Victory. The real one's in the Louvre in Paris. I know because I saw it there.
What's the sense of being victorious if you haven't a head?
What's the sense of my taking a trip, acquiring art and culture, if you're not going to pay attention?
Look, you're back here. That's the only victory that counts.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was deluged with all those letters.
Oh, be now, look.
Oh, I know. But if I ever go away again, and you don't write just because you're ill and... Oh, don't you see how much more worried that would make me?
He nods gently.
It all amounts to this, doesn't it? That February is still a long way away, and your father will simply have to listen to...
She smiles sweetly.
You know, you don't stop looking at me like that. I won't be responsible for what happens.
Lips pursed, she glances around.
Our public place is awful sometimes.
Awful. May I interrupt this loud conversation?
Oh, here you are.
Sir Charles, I'm glad to see you, sir. I'm sorry you weren't in when I called. You look fine.
It's nice to be back. You're looking very well yourself, Harry.
Thank you.
Sorry to be late, my dear, in an argument at the club.
Oh.
Well, what's on the program?
I thought we might go over to Stewart's and have tea, if that's agreeable to everybody.
Excellent, but while it's on my mind, Harry, there's something we must straighten out immediately. I've gone through all I can stand with Beatrice over this matter. Possibly I'm getting old and crotchety, but I won't put up with it any longer. I'm afraid you must take her off my hands as soon as possible.
Oh, Father!
Sir Charles!
Of course, I shall insist on all the trimmings. Wedding at St. Margaret's, Bishop Manners, a reception and all that.
Yes, sir, Sir Charles, I...
Well, sure, you're happy about it. Do something, man.
Jekyll kisses her. Sir Charles smiles at two shocked elderly women.
Just another work of art, madam. It's not in your catalogue.
Later, Jekyll strides through the front door of his townhouse. His butler hands him several messages.
We're feeling rather gay, are we, sir? Poole, old friend, I'm going to be married. Very soon.
Oh, sir, you don't know how happy that makes me.
I knew it would, Poole.
They shake hands.
Thank you.
Sir, there's a patient in the consulting room, a Miss Ivy Peterson. She's without an appointment, sir. If you've no time to see her, I could tell her...
No, that's all right. I'll see her.
Poole leaves. Stiffening, Jekyll eyes a closed door. His dark eyes blaze beneath his tense, furrowed brow. As he steps forward with a slow, even gait, his temple twitches. He sets his messages on a side table, then opens the door and enters his study. Behind a round wooden desk, neat, recessed bookshelves line the wall. Through an open door, he glimpses Ivy sitting in the airy consulting room. She stands and nervously smooths her tight-waisted blouse over her long, striped skirt, then walks toward him, twiddling the tassels on her purse. She meets his penetrating eyes and freezes. Her gaze tightens. With short, measured steps, she inches forward, studying the doctor's smooth, genteel features. A shy smile creeps across her face.
So it's you, sir. So you are the famous Dr. Jekyll. Well, I'm the one you and your friend took home that night. Huh? Remember?
Well, what brings you here, Miss Peterson?
I think...
Are you ill?
She eyes him hesitantly, then unbuttons her blouse and slips it off her shoulders, showing him her bare back. Dr. Jekyll looks, then closes his eyes.
There. That's what. Look at that.
Jekyll lowers his head.
Pretty, ain't it? Did you ever see a thing like that before?
I'll get you some lotion.
Lotion? It won't be lotion that'll do the trick, sir. It's more than that. I need help. I do. I can't stand it anymore. It's Hyde, sir. It's a man I know, Mr. Hyde. It's him that's done it, and more I can't tell you, sir. into human. He's a beast. And he won't let me go, sir, and I'm afraid to run away. Marcia, she's my girlfriend, and Freddy, that's her friend. They say it's my nerves, and they say that you know about such things, that you could help me. I can't help Hendrik, no!
She drops to her knees, burying her head in his hand. He stares grimly across the room, then meets her teary gaze.
If you can't help me, give me some poison so I can kill myself.
Why didn't you try to get help before? Why didn't you go to the police?
Tell you, I'm afraid.
No, he ain't a man. He's a devil, he is. Why, he knows what you are thinking about, he does.
Why, if he knows that I've been here today, I don't know what he'll do. It won't be nothing human I can tell. Oh, please. Please help me. Keep him off.
Tears roll down her cheeks as she moves closer to him.
I'll do anything you ask, sir. I ain't as bad as you might think. Well, men say that I ain't a bad looker when I'm more myself.
Her demure gaze hardens.
You liked me once a little, didn't you? Really, you're such a fine and kind gentleman. Honest, that night you walked out to my place, I made as if I didn't care. I did care. After you'd gone, I kept wishing you'd come back. Truly, I did.
He stands, pulling Ivy to her feet. Her clear, tender eyes stare wistfully into his. Jekyll returns a gentle gaze.
This man Hyde will never trouble you again. I give you my word.
How do you know, sir? He'll come back. He'll come back and kill me.
No. He won't come back. I'll see to it.
Oh, you don't know him, sir. Oh, you don't know him. He ain't human, he ain't.
I gave you my word. You'll never see Hyde again. You must believe me.
She smiles through her tears.
I believe you, sir. I believe you.
You must go now.
She nods.
Yes.
Tears stream from her forlorn eyes as she backs away. Jekyll watches her turn and step heavily into the consulting room. Ivy stops and turns back to meet his lingering stare. Her full, bowed lips tremble for words.
For a moment, I thought.
She spills a tear, then lowers her gaze and turns away.
Goodbye.
Jekyll watches her go, his face drawn. Poole briskly enters the study through the consulting room.
I'm very sorry, sir. I should never have admitted such a person. I didn't know she was hysterical, sir.
That's quite all right, Poole. I'm glad you admitted her.
Now, sir, about the wedding, sir. We've got a lot to discuss, sir. Of course, we've never been married before.
Yes, Poole, but let's not get upset now. We'll manage it somehow.
Nighttime, outside.
Good evening, Mr. Weller.
Good evening, Dr. Jekyll.
Nice touch of autumn in the air, sir. Very seasonable, isn't it?
Wonderful, Mr. Weller, wonderful. And listen here. Remember that comet I was telling you about? The blooming thing didn't hit us after all, did it?
You know why it didn't?
No, why?
Because it knew that at this very moment, just across the park, Sir Charles Emery is waiting to announce the coming marriage of his daughter to the very man you're talking to.
Dr. Jekyll, and my best wishes to the Mrs. Jekyll as is to be.
Thank you, Mr. Weller. You don't mind if I hurry on?
Godspeed, Dr. Jekyll.
Thank you, Mr. Weller.
Jekyll strolls off. Jekyll stops with a quizzical gaze. He continues on across a footbridge. Jekyll abruptly stops again. His strained face glistens with sweat. Pursing his lips, he shakes his head and walks on. Jekyll freezes and wearily strokes his brow. Wearing his black cape over his white tie tuxedo, he hesitantly moves on. With a slight stagger, he steps woozily over to a bench, sits down and rests his arm on his thick-handled cane. Drawing a deep breath, he takes off his shiny black top hat and massages his haggard brow. He blinks hard, then aims a blank stare straight ahead as his genteel face gradually metamorphoses. Sweat beads on his pale skin as his soft features grow large and rugged. His eyebrows thicken, forming sharp, bushy peaks over his sunken lids. At the outer corners of his pouchy, dark-circled eyes, wrinkles form deep crow's feet. His light hair frizzes, then turns black. Above his swollen, dimpled chin, his lips thin, revealing stained, jagged teeth. Glistening with sweat, Hyde glances nervously around, then stares at us with beady, bulging eyes and grins. He dons his top hat and hawkishly scans the foggy park. Carrying his thick cane, he rushes across the footbridge into the dark night. In her elegant hotel suite, Ivy pours herself some champagne. Raising up her glass, she watches the bubbles rise to the surface and beams a wide smile.
Oh.
She hugs the empty champagne bottle to her lace-collared blouse, brings her full glass to her nose, and sniffs the bouquet. Gently biting her lip, she spins around and steps over to a mirror with a playful grin. As she eyes her reflection, her face sags into a frown.
There's hoping that Hyde rots wherever he is. Burn slow while the time comes. Here is hoping that Dr. Jekyll thinks of his Ivy, as I know he'd like to.
Her lips curve in a grin.
As his Ivy thinks of him. Cause he's an angel. Here's to my angel.
She raises her glass in a toast, then sips. In the mirror, she glimpses Hyde in the doorway and raises her brow in disbelief. With his lips clenched in a sinister frown, he steps into the room, glaring at Ivy. Frozen, she stares back through dazed, heavy-lidded eyes. As he sets down his cane and takes off his top hat, she flinches. Her eyes widen in fright as he draws slowly closer.
Surprised? Couldn't be that you didn't expect to see me.
No. I've been waiting for you.
But you've been celebrating. Is there some new event, some change?
No. No, I just thought that...
Oh, you've just been drinking to calm your nerves, huh? It is your nerves, isn't it? Perhaps you should see a doctor.
Her stunned eyes flicker away.
No. No, I don't need a doctor. I'd like to have some wine, sir. I'll get you another glass.
He shoves her onto the sofa, tosses the bottle aside, then leans over her.
Dr. Jekyll's a good man. Yes, Dr. Henry Jekyll.
Is he?
Yes. Yes. And a fine gentleman, too. Different than any man you might know. Yes. Yes. A nice, fine gentleman like yourself, sir, wouldn't be knowing such a person. No. I ain't such a bad looker, sir, when I'm more myself. Yes. He's the kind of a man you can get down on your knees to, isn't he? A sweet, dear, pure man that you can trust and believe. He's a smug, hypocritical coward. That's what he is.
Oh, you could know that.
I know him intimately, and I detest him intimately. From his lofty brain to the soles of his virtuous feet. And you. I'll do anything you ask, sir. Well, you saw him, didn't you? You saw the respectable fool. Clutched his halo and held it straight, didn't he?
Oh, how?
Didn't he?
How do you know all that?
I know everything you do and everything you think.
Dr. Jekyll wouldn't tell you. He ain't the kind that...
And as you were leaving the room, you turned at the door, didn't you? And you said, for a moment, I thought... What did you think? What did you think? Did you think that Dr. Jekyll was falling in love with you? You with your cheap little dreams?
A tear streams down her cheek.
Or did you think, perhaps, that in him you saw a bit of me? Hyde!
As he glares, her lips quiver.
Oh, but it confuses you, doesn't it? It isn't quite clear, is it?
Oh. What are you going to do?
Something so simple. I'm going to put an end to all that confusion.
She breaks for the door. Hyde springs over a banister and grabs her arm.
Please, sir. Oh, no.
He pins her to the sofa.
Please, no.
Yes, dance. Dance and dream. Dream that you're Mrs. Henry Jekyll of Harley Street. Dancing with your own butler and 6 footmen. Dream that they've all turned into white mice and crawled into an eternal pumpkin.
Hyde sinks on top of her, out of view. Slowly, he rises back into view and warily eyes the door. In the hall, hotel guests gather outside Ivy's suite. Her friends Marcia and Fred dash up the stairs. As Fred heads toward the door, Hyde bursts into the hall, clubs Fred with his cane, then leaps over the railing onto a lower landing. He hammers another man in his path. Outside, he races down a foggy street. A carriage horse rears up.
Hey, over! Knock it, Governor! Steady, whoa, whoa, whoa!
Hyde dashes around a corner into a dark alley and slows his pace to a brisk walk. Later, he swings over the railing into the back stairwell of the lab. Throwing a wary glance over his shoulder, he searches his pockets, then furrows his brow in confusion and yanks on the door handle. Gritting his teeth, he pulls harder and slams his shoulder against the door. His beady eyes grow wide and frenzied. He steps upstairs and glances wildly around the shadows, then dashes down the street, his black cape swirling around his heels. In the dim light of a street lantern, he rushes around the corner to the front door of the townhouse and bangs the brass knocker and bell. Poole cracks open the chain-locked door.
Come on, open up, now let me in. I'm a friend of Dr. Jekyll's.
Dr. Jekyll's not at home,
sir. That doesn't make any difference. He told me to wait.
I know you're Dr. Jekyll's friend,
let
sir.
Let me in, I tell you.
You'll have to come back later,
you
sir.
Let me in or I'll bash
you. Don't go away.
You don't go away. I'm trying to send for the police.
Hyde spots a bobby across the street. Eyes blazing, Hyde heads in the other direction. Later, he marches down a lamplit street, then crosses into the shadows and hides in a doorway. Behind him, 2 mounted bobbies trot down the dim, rain-slipped street. Hyde watches them pass, his anxious face glistening with sweat. Alone again, he continues on, crossing the street to peer into a shop window. Neatly arranged stationery, inkwells, and pens fill the display case. Hyde carefully checks over his shoulder, then slams his cane against the window. Reaching through the shattered glass, he steals the display. A shopkeeper runs out as Hyde disappears into the fog.
This ain't no place to rob!
But robbed it is!
Now, guests leave the Emerys.
You know, I've heard some strange stories about this young Jekyll.
Good night, Charles.
Good night.
I'm so sorry your young man was detained, my dear.
So am I, Uncle Jeffrey.
Shaking his hand, Beatrice forces a quick smile, then glances tearfully at her father and steps away. As John stops her, her lips quiver wordlessly. She lowers her glistening gaze and presses past him. Furrowing his brow, John watches her go. Later, John arrives home and his butler steps downstairs.
Good evening, sir. There was a ring at the door a while ago, sir. When I answered it, there was nobody there. I found this.
John opens an envelope and takes out a skeleton key and a letter. It reads, John, enclosed is the key to the cabinet in my laboratory marked D. Go there at once and get the vials marked A, M, S, and Z. Bring them to your house. Remain there alone. At midnight, a man will call for the package. Give it to him. In the name of heaven, don't fail me. Harry. Later, at Jekyll's lab, John and Poole take vials out of a cabinet and put them in a medicine case.
You don't happen to know, I suppose, what Dr. Jekyll uses these for?
No, sir, I don't rightly know. I don't rightly know, sir. Oh.
Later, John briskly carries the medicine case to his back door. Hyde pops out of the bushes.
Have you got it? Have you got it?
What are you doing hiding behind that?
Why, I was waiting for you, Dr. Lanyon. I'm the man from Dr. Jekyll. The package, have you got it? I'll take
it
now.
Step inside the house.
No, it's not time.
Well, it's Jekyll's friend on the right to ask you a few questions.
They head inside.
Come now, Lanyon, don't waste time with prying questions.
I don't like your attitude, my friend.
Suppose you introduce yourself.
Hyde's the name. What difference does that make?
In the study, John slyly opens a desk drawer and glances down at a pistol.
You an acquaintance of Jekyll?
Yes. Yes, of course, I'm a friend, an old friend. Now let me have the...
Where is Dr. Jekyll?
Oh, don't worry, he's alive.
What's the matter, is he ill?
No, he's perfectly all right, I tell you.
Very well, then I'll come with you and see for myself.
You pretentious fool.
If you take another step with that, I'll shoot.
Now, wait a minute, Lanyon. I can't let you come with me, and I can't tell you any more than I've already...
Why not?
Because... I warn you now, Lanyon, don't stick your nose into this. You better let me go, Lanyon. You can ask Jekyll all about it tomorrow if you want to.
You'll take me to Harry Jekyll this minute.
For the last time, Lanyon, will you let me leave here alone?
No.
All right, then. Let it be on your own head.
With John's pistol aimed at his chest, Hyde takes off his top hat, hurriedly opens the medicine case, and rifles through the glass vials. His frizzy hair stands on end. John knits his brow as Hyde sets three bottles and a beaker on the desk. Holding the empty beaker before his beady, dark-rimmed eyes, Hyde carefully measures several dark drops from a vial, then adds a clear liquid. The concoction starts to steam. John squints in astonishment as Hyde grins faintly and tops off the bubbling black potion with another clear liquid. Hyde stares at the gaseous vapors rising from the antidote, then lowers the beaker and aims a steely stare at John.
Now once again, Lanyon, will you let me take this glass and go?
No, why should I?
For your own sake, Lanyon.
Whatever you're going to do, get on with it.
Hyde glares at him, then brings the beaker to his lips and swills the steaming potion in four long gulps. He shudders. Hunched over, he staggers backward, drops into an armchair, and clutches his head. Aghast, John winces. Hyde, gritting his teeth, leans back, swinging his head from side to side as he loosens his tuxedo shirt collar. Slowly, Hyde's rugged features begin to soften. Above his steady, unblinking eyes, his eyebrows thin into neat arches. Thin lips replace the wide, toothy grin. The crow's feet at the corners of his dark, pouchy eyes fade away as his complexion smooths into Jekyll's boyish face. Sweat beads on Jekyll's forehead, soaking the soft curls of his bangs. Drawn and haggard, Jekyll stares blankly ahead with tired eyes. His matted, wavy hair lies flatly on his head. Jekyll blinks his narrow, fatigued eyes and passes out. John stands frozen in shock as his friend comes to.
I warned you, John. Even as Hyde, I warned you.
John paces over to the window, lowers his head, and wearily strokes his brow. He gazes worriedly down at Jekyll in the armchair.
See what you've done, don't you? I mean, you've gone beyond. You've tampered with... You've committed the supreme blasphemy.
I know, John, I know.
You must destroy the formula at once, do you understand?
I've done that.
No, I mean you must destroy it from your mind. You can't take this thing again.
I know. But tonight on my way to Sir Charles. You see, I thought I could control. But tonight this change, this thing you saw happen without my...
What about B?
I'll tell her. At least I have strength enough left for that.
Later, Jekyll walks through the Emery's garden courtyard to the back of the house. Standing in the dark night, he peers through a French door into the drawing room, where Beatrice plays a baby grand piano. Her father steps out of the room reading a paper. Watching from outside, Jekyll steps closer to the glass and calls out B. Jekyll calls out again, and Beatrice glimpses him outside. Beaming an excited smile, she opens her mouth to speak. Jekyll brings a hushing finger to his lips. Wearing a white lace-trimmed dress and flowers in her blonde hair, Beatrice glances warily over her shoulder, then hurries into the greenhouse and opens the glass door for Jekyll. He meets her smile with a troubled frown.
I heard you playing, and I thought we could talk in here. Just as well as anywhere.
Of course, dear.
I can't imagine how you felt last night when I...
Oh, well, you don't have to explain anything. I know it must have been important. You know that I'd forgive anything.
But that's it. You mustn't forgive. You mustn't forgive anymore. Just make up your mind to...
Her soft eyes glisten as she sits beside him.
Tell me, darling. What's wrong? What is it, Harry? Look at me.
He stares grimly at the floor.
Please be. Let me begin. There's no way to begin except to tell you.
Tell me what?
You're a brave girl, aren't you?
Yes.
That's why I can tell you out like this, because you are brave and strong. Always remember that. B, we can't be married. I must never see you again.
You don't know what you... Harry, what's happened? Look at me.
Just that. That's all I can tell you.
But why? What? Well, you've always said that there's nothing we couldn't discuss. Nothing secret between you and me ever.
Don't ask me anymore, please. If you ever believe me now. If you ever trust me now. It's for your happiness and mine, believe me. That's all I can say.
Oh, my darling.
He pulls away from her embrace. She follows him and holds his shoulders.
Oh, you're ill. There's something...
No, B, don't ask me anymore. Don't try to understand. Just take my word. Now, please, go.
This is so wrong of me. To make you go through all of this. You're trying not to hurt me, aren't you? Harry, it's all right. If you don't love me anymore. I know things like that can happen.
He embraces her tightly.
Oh, you do. You still do. What is it, dearest?
Be, darling.
No, don't say anymore. Just hold me close.
He nuzzles her tear-streaked cheek, then gazes down at her.
Bye, darling.
With glazed eyes, she watches him go.
Harry!
She runs after him.
Harry! Please come back! Please don't!
He leaves.
Harry!
She sinks onto the patio step. Swinging his cane, Jekyll strides around the side of the house to an ornate wrought iron gate. He opens the grilled door, hesitates for a moment, then closes it. As he stares sharply back toward the greenhouse, his cheek twitches. On the patio steps, Beatrice buries her face in her arm. Sobs wrap her slender frame. We see a caped man's polished black leather shoes approach Beatrice from the gate. The thick stalk of his cane floats several inches off the ground. We slowly follow him toward the patio, where he stops and stands over Beatrice. She glances up at his long black cape, then tightly clutches his hand.
Oh, you did come back. Oh, my darling.
She looks up. The brutish Hyde stares down at her with a wide, toothy grin. As he pulls her close, she resists. As Hyde tries to kiss her neck, she faints. Sir Charles runs out.
Beatrice! Beatrice!
Hyde lays Beatrice down, then shoves her father off the patio. With a savage grin, Hyde grabs his cane and repeatedly clubs Sir Charles. The cane snaps. Hyde stands as the butler rushes out.
What's the matter, sir? What's wrong, sir?
Hyde runs along a high stone wall.
There he goes.
He leaps over the fence to the street.
Hey! Stop there! Stop.
Hyde shoves a man to the ground and dashes off. Two bobbies run up. One helps the fallen man, while the other chases Hyde down a rain-slicked street. Hyde leaps over an iron fence into an alley. As two men try to grab him, he breaks away and takes off. Two bobbies follow. On a dark street, Hyde sprints up to the front door of Jekyll's townhouse and tugs on the handle. It's locked. He hops onto the spiked iron fence and dives through the window. Poole rushes downstairs.
How did you...
Hyde pushes him down. Poole hits his head on the stairs and passes out. Behind the house, Hyde races into the lab, bolts the solid wooden door, then hurries through another archway. Hastily, he slams another solid door closed and bolts it. Slinging his cape back, he scampers downstairs into the lab. At the Emery's, John stands over Sir Charles as a detective examines the broken cane.
This is the weapon, Doctor.
John studies the thick hooked handle. His lips part in recognition.
Yes, I... You come with me, Inspector. Ward, you remain here.
Yes.
Now, in the lab, the genteel-featured Dr. Jekyll sets down an empty beaker. Beads of sweat glisten on his haggard face. Sitting in front of his chemistry table, he wearily strokes his damp brow, then glances around nervously. A wooden partition with several windows divides the chemistry lab from the rest of the bleak stone-walled room. With his light wavy hair pushed off his face, he steps over to the mirror and carefully studies his lean features. Jekyll glances at the door. Outside, a bobby rams the lock with an iron rod. He breaks through, then he and his partner slam their shoulders against the second door. Inside, Jekyll stares anxiously up at the door as it bursts open. Poole leads the bobbies downstairs.
Dr. Jekyll, that frightful maniac broke into the house. Did he attack you, sir?
Yes.
Which way did he go, sir?
Out there?
I didn't even know you were at home, sir. Are you badly hurt?
No, I'll be all right.
This here door's locked.
They turn from the back door.
We'd better go out that way.
The bobbies head for the stairs. John rushes in.
Wait!
Sweat glistens on Jekyll's pale, drawn face as he watches John, Poole, the stout detective, and the two bobbies gather around him.
There. Heaven help him.
Dr. Lanyon.
But I know this gentleman. He's Dr. Jekyll.
I know. Nevertheless, there's your man.
I'm sorry, sir, but I know Dr. Jekyll. I've known him for years. This is your master, isn't it?
Of course, sir. No doubt of it, sir.
Then we must have lost him. Come, men.
No, wait. Tell them, Jekyll. Tell them. It's no use, Jekyll. You know it's no use. Tell them what happened. I beg of you, Jekyll. Tell them who you are. Tell them what you've done.
I've done nothing. I'm Dr. Jekyll. I'm Dr. Henry Jekyll.
His features start to thicken.
I've done nothing.
Dark pouches form below his beady, thick-browed eyes.
I'm Dr. Henry Jekyll, I tell you.
Deep wrinkles groove his sweat-beaded forehead and rugged cheeks.
You're looking for a man named Hyde. Hyde!
He grits his jagged, stained teeth in an obstinate frown.
I'm Dr. Jekyll, I tell you. I tell you, I'm Dr. Jekyll. I'm Dr. Henry Jekyll.
The detective takes a pair of handcuffs from his inside coat pocket.
It's no use, Jekyll. You'd better come quietly.
Hyde slams the partition door and clubs the windows. Shielding their eyes, the men back away from the shattering glass. Hyde climbs over the partition wall, wrenches free from a Bobby's grip, and pulls a dagger from an ornamental shield. At the top of the stairs, John aims a pistol down at Hyde. Dagger in hand, the madman inches upstairs. With his hair in wild straggles around his glaring eyes, Hyde bares his teeth in a wicked frown. The dagger slips from Hyde's hand as he falls backward down the stairs. He lands on his back with his arms and legs outstretched. Pistol in hand, John hurries downstairs to stand over the still body with the others. Stark white light glistens on Hyde's sweat-beaded face. Over his pouchy closed eyes, his bushy eyebrows begin to thin into fine crescents. Hyde's dark frizzy hair relaxes into gentle waves. His rugged features soften as the wrinkled skin smooths into Jekyll's flawless complexion. With a heavy gaze, Poole sinks to his knees beside Dr. Jekyll's body.
Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the path of righteousness.
Title appears, The End, a Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture. Cast, Spencer Tracy as Dr. Harry Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Ingrid Bergman as Ivy Peterson. Lana Turner as Beatrice Emery. Donald Crisp as Sir Charles Emery. Ian Hunter as Dr. John Lanyon. Barton McLean as Sam Higgins. C. Aubrey Smith as the Bishop. Peter Godfrey as Poole. Sarah Allgood as Mrs. Higgins. Frederick Warlock as Dr. Heath. Francis Robinson as Marcia, Dennis Green as Freddy, and Billy Bevan as Mr. Weller.